change. We all are part of God's great big family.
And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
This is Recovery Radio, and I am your host, James Boyd. The cut we were listening to just now is We Are the World. That's an old classic, beautiful song, and I love it. The title of the show this morning is A Healing Forest. It's a Healing Forest production. If you want to call in and make a comment or have a question, you can call in at 304-885-0708. I have a very special guest that's calling in this morning. It's Mrs. Paula Jean Swearingen. She's running for United States Senator in West Virginia. And I'm going to give you a little background on Mrs. Paula Jean before I bring on air. Paula Jean is a native of Mullins, West Virginia. Paula Jean Swearingen's coal mining roots grow deep. She's a coal miner's daughter. In fact, she's a coal miner's granddaughter. And I think my caller is calling in now. And so I'm gonna Good morning. Good morning. How are you this morning, Miss Paula Jean?
Good morning, James. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. So glad you could join us this morning. Yeah, we're going to have a great time on the show this morning. So happy to hear about what you're planning to do here in West Virginia. So I'm not going to belabor this much and just go ahead and give you an opportunity to chime in and tell everybody who you are and why you called in this morning, why you're running for senator. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. It's a great pleasure, James. I had a great time in the Eastern Panhandle this past couple of days. I got back into Buchanan and went into Morgantown and some different areas and some food banks and stuff. But I just wanted to say it's a great pleasure to spend some time in Eastern Panhandle. You guys were wonderful before I got started.
Yeah, I had to run out of church.
Paula Jean Swearingen. And I am running for the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to tell my story?
Yes, I do. I would like you to tell your story. It's a very heartwarming and authentic. Go ahead, Paula.
Okay. I was born in Mullins, West Virginia. I was born a coal miner's daughter and granddaughter. I lived in a community called Iroquois. And when I was little, our water was orange with a blue and purple film. Found out later in life that we had drank acid mine drainage. But long story short, living in that community, being a coal miner's daughter and dealing with the boom and the bust in the coal industry, my stepdad got laid off in coal mines, and we moved to North Carolina when I was 12 years old. And until that point, I thought my hair was red because of the water pollution. In North Carolina, you know, my stepdad and my mom worked in factories. She worked in a nursing home trying to make a living after we had made we had a good financial life in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then right before we moved, I knew what hungry was like for the first time in my life. We came back around 2001. My grandpa got sick with black lung and passed away, and my mother came back to take care of my grandmother, and I followed. And we came back, I seen something was wrong. I realized that people were still dealing with the water issues the same way that I did when I was little. But also, my neighbor's daughter, she was 8 years old. Her name was Destiny. She got cancer, and it was a rare form of bone cancer. And I started asking questions, and the family said that the doctors were saying it was environmental. They couldn't pinpoint the cause. And there was another little girl in the adjoining town that got the same kind of cancer. I found out about mountaintop removal, which is blowing up our mountains for coal, which has taken the jobs from coal miners. It's very destructive in my part of the state. It covers our rivers and streams. It poisons our water. It blows silica dust in our kids' lungs. And I got pretty angry because the Industrial Revolution was built on the backs of coal miners, their families, and surrounding communities. And I'm a proud coal miner's daughter. But I don't think that these industries should come in our communities, destroy our water, our land, and our heritage, and leave us breadcrumbs. In the southern coal fields, we have people that's living in conditions comparable to a third world country. Not only do we worry about our water and our air, but some people still don't even have adequate sewage systems. So I became active. I started doing everything I could to fight for my community, my family, my state. I spoke to anybody that would listen to me. I worked with social justice groups, environmental groups. I spoke at the United Nations. I spent a lot of my life, many, many years, trying to fight for West Virginia because I knew that we were going down the wrong path, that we've been dependent on coal, but, you know, these industries have not been good to us. And there's a clear difference between being a friend of a coal miner and being a friend of the coal industry. And through my path of, you know, even lobbying and begging, my biggest awakening was, first of all, Jim Justice. He's one of the biggest polluting coal barons in West Virginia. He's putting silica dust from mountaintop removal three miles from my house and my children's lungs. He doesn't pay his bills. He's poisoned a lot of the water in southern West Virginia, and some of my friends have died in his mind. And he became my Democratic governor. My second part of my awakening was after begging many of our incumbents throughout the years. I heard Joe Manchin was at a town hall in Charleston one day, and so after I got off work, and I run to Charleston to try to reason with him one more time. And when I sat in front of him, talked to him about burying a lot of my family members to coal mining. I buried my daddy at 52 years old as well. My uncles have black lung. My stepdad has black lung. A lot of my family members that have black lung have never gotten their black lung benefits. And I told him we wanted clean water, we wanted clean air, and we wanted clean and safe jobs. He told me that we would have to agree to disagree, tried to bid the coal miners in the crowd against me for their jobs. And we ended up, me and the coal miners, standing outside after the event talking about solutions while my senator, me being a coal miner's daughter, didn't even think about even giving me something so basic as a clean glass of water. After my family and my friends and my neighbors helped power this country, we shouldn't have to beg for something so basic as a clean glass of water. And I knew that if we didn't do something here in West Virginia to fight for a diverse economy and fight for our children's future and make sure that these industries took care of us, I knew that we were not going to have any promise for any type of future. Our most valuable asset to me in this state is the people. And if these industries want to come in and they want our resources, then they need to take care of us. I'm an ordinary person. This wasn't my dream. This wasn't my life goal. But like I said, I knew if we didn't fight back and we didn't fight for our kids, then we wasn't going to have anything. We see ordinary people across the country, from a local level to a federal level, running for office, because I think that we've lost touch in this country. If you look at a lot of our incumbents in the state, they're corporate serving and self-serving, but they're not serving us. And people are tired of them serving their funders and not and tunneling their vision into their pocketbooks. I'm affiliated with an organization called Brand New Congress. They approached me when around the time that I was deciding to run for the United States Senate. And they're running a whole slate of candidates to run for Congress around the country. People-funded campaigns, none of us are taking corporate and corporate PAC dollars. And a lot of these campaigns already have won their races. They've won their primaries. And we see here in West Virginia a lot of people like myself as well, and a lot of people that are running with me to run for Congress are running for office too, because they're just like us. They're tired of the same things. If you look at Patrick Morsi, Evan Jenkins, Shelley Moore Capito, they're all funded by the same funders. They're funded by industry and big pharma. And you look at the addiction epidemic here, and if you don't mind, I want to touch base on that.
Yes, ma'am. Please do.
I let everybody know that I was running for office almost a year ago. And through my path, I wanted to make sure that I heard about all the problems in the state. I knew about what was going on in my area in the coal fields, but I wanted to know what was going on with everybody else. And what I've seen, not only like places like Ritchie County, in the northern panhandle too, that feel like they're forgotten. They're dealing with the gas industry. Not only are they taking people's property, but the jobs are not local. I've stayed at several hotels that have pipeliners and frackers there, but they're not training our workforce for those jobs. I'm really, really afraid that we're going down the same path. But with the addiction epidemic and through that path, I spent a time with a lot of leaders across the state that are fighting the addiction epidemic to figure out how we can solve that problem. What I found out was the first problem that we have, of course, is big pharma in the pockets of our incumbents. The second thing is the pharmaceutical companies, because they are in the pockets of our incumbents, they're shipping pills in mass amounts into our state. There's small communities like Kermit, West Virginia, community of 983. One pharmacy was shipped a couple million pills.
Oh, my gosh.
With drug replacement therapy, I've heard it's beneficial for some people, but that seems like it's the only alternative that we're hearing from our leadership because it feeds back into big pharma. What I've learned is long-term peer recovery systems is been proven to work. We need long-term recovery systems on every corner in West Virginia until we can fight this epidemic. They're not putting money into these systems. They need social workers. They need mental health providers. They need a lot more support, and they need money, and they're not receiving it. And on a federal level and a state level, we need to put money into these systems. When somebody goes in for treatment, if they go in for 30 days, that's just detox. They're just getting that drug out of their body. They're not ready to be reintroduced in society, and they're more likely to overdose. We're dealing with one of the largest overdose rates in the country, and the problem is not being solved. Like I said, they're taking that money and they're putting it into drug replacement therapy, and they're not looking at the situation as a whole. And what we need the most in this state, and probably everywhere that we're dealing with this epidemic, is we need long-term recovery systems, and we don't have them. We have them in a few places, and they're successful. They run on pennies, but they need more support.
Well, good. So I have a question for you in terms of, because this is Recovery Radio. If you're elected as state senator to represent the Eastern Panhandle and all of West Virginia, what would be the first thing you do to kind of get on top of the drug overdose and death in the Eastern Panhandle?
The first thing I would do, the first thing I'd do was I would first sign on to a bill for universal health care system so everybody can have access to medical care. And it wouldn't matter if you had money or not or what type of recovery system that you went into. You would be able to have that insurance, which would help those long-term recovery systems. The second thing I would do was introduce legislation that we put federal money into every area in this country to end the epidemic and make sure that these long-term recovery systems have support, and make sure in that legislation that it states that you also get the support of social workers, medical health providers, and whatever people need to get off these drugs. Because it's not only opioids, it's heroin. That's why I've been told by the addiction community to call it the addiction epidemic, because it's not just opioids. And make sure, you know, that when people do need the drug replacement therapy, it's available to them, but that's not the only solution, because that's not the only thing that works.
Yeah, it seems to me, Paula Jean, that there's a lot of tunnel vision going on in the policymakers. So how do you feel, what's your position on the Narcan, the overdose disruptor that the Surgeon General talked about just recently?
I think everybody needs, you're talking about the shot, right?
Yes. Well, the shot, the inhaler, there's a couple of different delivery mechanisms, but it's the Narcan.
Everybody needs to have it. It needs to be available to everyone. The one thing that I've learned with the addiction epidemic, too, is the stigma. I've seen this affect all walks of life. A grandmother can go in and get hip replacement and come out and trust her medical provider, and she's addicted to narcotics. We need to make sure that we realize that we're human beings, and this is a crisis. This is a disease. I don't know anybody that woke up and said, I want to be a drug addict. And we need to make sure that we take care of our people. And West Virginia is suffering the most from this epidemic.
Yes.
It's been proven that West Virginia has the highest overdose death rate. And of course, we need to make sure our Narcan is available to everyone.
Yeah, I'm a part here on Recovery Radio. I'm part of the Center for Addiction Recovery Training. It's called the Peer Recovery, Peer Support and Peer Recovery Coach Academy. And it's a volunteer organization right now. But, you know, we just need more people to buy into it. What is one of the things that we can expect from you on Capitol Hill in terms of the Peer Recovery Coach Academy and how it's funded?
Well, I'm hearing that you're not getting enough grants and federal dollars. And like I said, and I'll say it again, it's because it's only all the money is going into drug replacement therapy. Here's an example. Patrick Morrissey, he adopted a lawsuit with Cardinal Health. And I forget the money that was awarded with that lawsuit, but it was a couple million dollars that was supposed to come into West Virginia to end the addiction epidemic. When that money was awarded, which, it was just pennies for Cardinal Health. Mm-hmm. When that money was awarded, it went all into drug replacement therapy clinics, and it did not. None of that money went into long-term recovery systems. So it all, all of that money funneled right back into Cardinal Health.
For more medication.
That should be awakening to every West mm-hmm. Virginian. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen people that, they say that drug replacement therapy is the only thing for them. But through my path, and you correct me because you're more educated on this topic than myself, but through my path and what I've seen across this state, it's been proven that long-term recovery systems work. At Opportunity House in Buchanan, when somebody goes in, they have to obligate themselves for at least 6 months, and they have to be reintroduced into society. And they have to heal, and they deserve to heal. And we even talk about the economic aspect of this and the stigma. Oh, well, I don't want to pay for these people. Well, we depleted our funeral fund within a couple of months. Mm-hmm. In 2017 because of the high overdose rate. We are, you look at the children that are in foster care. You look at the children that have to go out of state in the foster care. You look at how the state is paying for the children that because their grandparents are having to raise them and they're having to, it's all these things that's costing this state more money as a whole than saving money. Well, we're not creating a solution and giving people a true path to recovery. And like I said, this is one of the biggest things I will fight the hardest for. I don't tell this story often, but mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and tell it just because mm-hmm. We all need to know what kind of impact this has. This was, I'm 43 years old, and this didn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And when we were in North Carolina, my sister, she passed away when she was 32 years old. She didn't pass away because she overdosed. She had juvenile diabetes. Mm-hmm. But my sister became a victim of drug addiction. My sister was one of the sweetest people in the world. As a teenager, I dealt with that stigma a bit myself. I was bitter a lot of my life because when my sister was on drugs, most of my teenage life, I didn't understand why the men were knocking on my door that I didn't know when my mom was at work and me running them off when I was 13 years old mm-hmm. because my sister was selling herself to neighbors for drugs.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's something that nobody ever expects. Mm-hmm. And you look at the domestic violence aspect of this and the human trafficking. Mm-hmm. When somebody's addicted, it changes them totally. There's people that are selling their children for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, too, is mental health. But also, too, when somebody has that hunger for heroin or narcotics, mm-hmm. it changes them totally.
It does.
There, I've seen good people that changed their whole outlook on life. Mm-hmm. My sister was not the kind of person that would sell herself to the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
It was hell for my family.
Yes.
And it was hell for her. And she never did get the help that she needed.
Mm-hmm.
I will fight and do everything that I can because we see it every day. I go down my road in Coal City and it looks like the episode, an episode of The Walking Dead sometimes.
Oh, yes.
And there's, I've seen a lot of my friends and my neighbors that I never thought would end up down this path, and they have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a disgrace that we stigmatize people when it changes their whole life. When people give up, turn their back on their children, when you know they were good parents, you know there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. And it's drugs. Question. I believe that change happens from within, and it sounds like you're very passionate about being on the inside to make a change. How do you feel about that? Change is from within.
I absolutely agree with that. Like I said, this wasn't my dream. I think that with all the problems in this state, and as hard as I fought, I think that we deserve, this nation was built by the people, for the people, and of the people. And when this nation was built, it was designed to have diverse leaders. And when we say leaders, I mean public servants. I don't think anybody in Washington or in the Capitol should call themselves leaders. They should be public servants. They work for us because that's what this, you know, that's how this country was founded.
Yes.
And what I want to do, because I'm a mom, I have worked many, many years so my children can enjoy the mountains, the most beautiful place in the world to me, and they could stay here, they could live here, they could raise my grandchildren someday here. Now I beg my children to leave. We look at the depopulation. You look at this state as a whole. We have been considered collateral damage. It's one of the sickest and poorest states in the nation. And we have some of the most beautiful people in the world here. And I want to fight for it. And I want to be a voice for our people. I've said it over and over and over, and it's a campaign slogan because I've said it for years. We need to invest in ourselves.
Yes.
If we don't take our state back, we don't unite, and we don't invest in the people here, we're not going to have anything left.
Mm-hmm.
And the addiction epidemic is part of the systemic problem with the poverty, the pollution, the abuse. This should have never, ever happened. And you see in extractive communities, you can come up in the coal fields, and I've taken and given tours to national media where people live in conditions comparable to a third world country. The creeks run black and orange. People beg for a clean glass of water. Sewage is running out in the creeks. That's a disgrace.
Yes.
As much as we have sacrificed, like I said, the power of this country, we should be living in, you know, at least living comfortably in mm-hmm. the coal fields.
Yeah. I heard you mention something about... I don't want to get too far away from this particular statement. As far as the drug culture is concerned, the abuse, you said it's systemic. Can you talk a little bit about what that actually means in relation to drugs and alcohol?
I think it's a trickle-down effect. Even mm-hmm. when you see poor communities, you see more addicted communities. Because not only is this addiction epidemic happened because of, you know, like I say, it's systemic because of our incumbents, because of big pharma, but also because of the poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And when people don't have hope and they feel oppressed, they turn to alternative ways
mm-hmm.
To feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we don't have good roads, we don't have good schools, we don't have good jobs, people don't have anything to look forward to, they turn to alternative methods for peace.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not a good path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the systemic part is something that's systematically inserted into our lives to disrupt and corrupt.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So my question is, there's a great exodus because you also said that you're telling your children to leave West Virginia. What do you think is, I know there's a lot of problems in terms of addiction, this great exodus that's taking place. Do you agree with that? And how can we change that?
Well, the first start, as I said, is to fight the addiction epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
I have a vision. I've not heard any other federal candidate talk about a true vision for this state. We need to have an investment bank. We have to invest federal dollars into states like ours that are dealing with these kind of problems. We can have renewables. We can manufacture those here. we can have, if we legalized hemp, put it on mountaintop removal sites for the agriculture, those places are not fit for a rattlesnake. They don't even have topsoil. I don't think there's any type of medicinal purpose at this point because it's so toxic, but hemp has been proven to clean the soil. It creates topsoil, and we can actually create economic growth and do something better with the damage. We can have hydropower, biofuel, geothermal power. If we have good roads, good schools, an inviting place for businesses to come, have good broadband services, then we can bring more business here. With a single-payer healthcare system, it not only will help every family, it will save them $6,000 a year. We look at the small businesses. One of our biggest industries is tourism. Small businesses have a hard time competing with the big industry and the singular industry-based economy. If we can help them by not having to worry about paying high premiums to the employees or not even being able to afford health insurance for them at all, so they keep their workforce down so their company can't grow, it's going to help our state as a whole. The possibilities are endless, but we have to make sure that we have people that are visionaries for our future. And we have to make sure that people have good access to education. If you look what's happened in this state, too, our educational system on a local level is based on the tax base. So children in poorer communities do not get the same type of education as children in wealthier communities. We have to make sure that every child gets the same right to an education in this whole state. With the consolidation of the schools that we had, instead of investing in that money in local schools, some children now get on the school bus. They have to report to school at 6:30 and they're 2 hours on the school bus. Mm. You think about how that affects their activity when they go to school every day, and even our educators are having to drive 2 and 3 hours to go to their job. A lot of them are going out of state. You've seen with our teachers and public employees, they were out on the street begging for a living wage and health care. That's a disgrace, yes. Especially, like I said, as much as this state has sacrificed to power our country, our educators should have never been standing on the streets like that. That they
excuse
did.
Me for, excuse
and
me for a second.
They shouldn't be having to travel to other states for jobs.
Let me cut you off
if
right
people
there,
have
Paula Jean.
Access to health care.
Yes, ma'am.
Good jobs. Educational.
Hold on 1 second, Paula. Can you hold on 1 second?
Because
we keep getting people calling in, and I just want to make an announcement that we're not accepting additional calls until this interview is done, okay, in case they're listening now. And call back after we're done with this interview. I apologize for interrupting you, but I'm the engineer.
No problem.
Yes, John is the engineer.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paula. Go ahead. You can pick up
if people have the opportunity to prosper and live the American dream, they're not going to turn to the drugs either.
That's
like
right.
I said, it's everything's connected. It's pieces to the puzzle. People are waking up to the corruption in our government, and we have to do better. And it's not only this election cycle. I beg to my fellow West Virginians, this next election, if it's from a local level to a federal level, please put your name on the ballot and let's make sure that we have true representatives for our state.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, you preempted what my next question was. I believe that in order for development to occur, it must be preceded by a vision, and you just laid out your vision. And so the next point is a great learning must take place. And I believe that that starts at the grade school level and within the homes. How do you feel about that? For development and change to occur, a great learning must take place. What's your vision?
I totally agree. You look at what happened in the coal fields growing up there. What we heard a lot was grow up and be a coal miner or marry a coal miner. We had Friends of Coal putting propaganda, and sending out coloring books in their schools so we could be dependent on this industry, whether the market would decline or the market, you know, if the market was good and sound, or if it would decline, because we've dealt with the boom and bust mm-hmm. of the market for a couple decades, and that's what happened with my family. You can go in the coal mines, you can make $50,000 a year and not have even a high school education, and you're not even taught to go to college. You're not taught that there's anything else here. So it kept us downtrodden. If these industries are not having to compete, then they don't have to pay their fair share. And I think the cruelest lie that any politician can tell anybody right now, that the market for coal is going to rebound. We have seen it for decades decline. In the 70s, we had over 120,000 coal miners mm-hmm. to a populace of 1.8 million. Right now, we have less than 18,000 coal miners in this mm-hmm. state.
Wow.
Last summer, people went hungry because the market then declined.
Mm-hmm.
We need an alternative so people won't starve and lose everything that they have. And if we let the same thing happen with the gas industry, and we don't fight back, and we let them take our land and our water and not pay their fair share of severance tax,
mm-hmm.
then we're just going to be abused again. And we have to fight back and say that we want a diverse economy.
Yes, yes.
We deserve it. We can have it. If we legalize cannabis, we could see growth within 6 to 8 months. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it's going to be legalized on the federal level. Look at the growth that Colorado had. That's our start to a diverse economy. How come West Virginians always have to fall behind? How come we can't have our piece of the pie?
Mm. Yeah, so with that being said, that was very well put, Paula. I'm going to get you to weigh in on this this question. What would our lives here in West Virginia, in our community, our nation look like if it were working in a good way? What would it look like in your vision?
My vision is to make sure that people don't suffer like they have. Not only have we dealt with the addiction epidemic, we have the highest rates of cancer in the country. I've buried a lot of my family. Like I said, three of my friends this year, my aunt already this year, and my uncle has black lung, and he was already diagnosed with cancer. My vision is for people not have to beg for water. They don't have to, worry about their children getting cancer. They don't have to worry about feeding their children, putting a roof over their head. And they don't have to worry about the addiction epidemic. We know that there's problems with drugs, but when we were kids, you knew that drugs were there, but it wasn't as bad as it is now. My vision is that we can live in peace. I know my path as an advocate for this state. I spent many nights away from my kids. I spent money I didn't have to fight for my state. I never did it for notoriety. I wanted it, and I'm not even doing this for notoriety. I've seen leaders in this state fight and die, never tasting what is supposed to be normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to enjoy my grandchildren one day. Mm-hmm. I want to live like every other American that doesn't have to deal with the problems like in this state. Goodness knows, like Flint, Michigan, they're struggling like we are too. And there's different, there's different parts, people are suffering, across the country. But a lot of people don't have to worry about the problems that we do. We have to beg for basic human rights.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go to work every day and not have to worry and just be able to live the American dream and just be able to enjoy my children and my grandchildren. And not every West Virginia deserves that.
Yes.
That's all I want.
Yeah.
Is for our people to be able to live what the American dream is supposed to be.
Wow. Yeah, that is amazing. Keeping along that same vein, guns and drugs. Can you talk a little bit about that mixture here in West Virginia?
Well, I come from coal country, and a lot of people hunt. That's how they survive from where I'm at. and I fully believe in the Second Amendment. But I believe in common sense gun measures. You have to have a license to drive a car. I think you have to have a license to have a firearm. If you're going to own a gun, you need to at least know how to use it. It scares me that there's these vigilantes out here walking in the streets that don't even know how to own a firearm now, don't even know how to use it. We need to know, you know, we need to know about gun safety. And you look at him, you know, the AR-15s and stuff, those are toys to somebody. You know, anybody with common sense, that's a toy. That's a nightmare for a psychopath. We have ways to, you know, with tracking systems like the Board of Pharmacy. And these are just thoughts that I've had. You know, you look at HIPAA, so you don't want to break HIPAA laws. But mm-hmm. when somebody goes into a medical, you know, mental health provider, they've been proven unstable. There should be some type of tracking system, and those systems need to be accountable. I know now that, you know, we do have tracking systems, but I don't think they're enough, and I do not think that through these tracking systems either that they're not held accountable. They like a lot of things with their government. Things are not enforced. We have to make sure that we do everything to protect our children. It's like somebody said yesterday, you know, you hear with the media, you have the extreme Republicans and mm-hmm. you have the extreme Democrats. You know, you have both sides with the media that are extreme one way or the other. But then you have the middleman, you know, the people that you're talking to, you know, when in a setting at a restaurant, that everybody says, you know, we want to make sure that we protect the Second Amendment, but we want to protect our kids, too. And I just think that this is one of those issues that they divide us with mm-hmm. so they can, you know, put through bills and laws that we don't see. And so the media amplifies stupid things like this when nobody wants kids shot up in a school. Like I said, I think this issue has been dividing propaganda when we need common sense gun measures. Everybody knows it. And any gun owner that I know knows it. Mm-hmm. My family, my kids have hunted, you know, that was the way we put, you know, raised my kids was put food on our table. Mm-hmm. But when my kids went out with their father in the woods and their grandfather and they learned to survive that way, it was common sense gun measures and they were taught how to use those guns and they wasn't available to my children and they still aren't. And they're, you know, they're in their 20s and mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We just have to use common sense.
Common sense.
Period.
So as a Vietnam veteran, Paula, I'd like to ask you about how do you feel about the automatic weapons in the community for civilians? As a senator, how can we kind of tackle that situation?
Like I said, I think those are toys to some people. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that they stay out of the wrong hands.
And how can we do that?
I don't know why anybody would want a heavy weapon like mm-hmm. that, but if they do, you know, want to go to the shooting range and play with a gun, you know, I mean, to each their own. But yeah. We have to make sure that it keeps out of psychopath
yeah.
hands.
Well, I know that when as a Vietnam veteran, like I said before, when I was given an automatic weapon, it was for one reason, and that's to kill as many people in as short of amount of time that I could. But that was in the jungles of South Vietnam. But here in Martinsburg, West Virginia, where I live, there are automatic and semi-automatic weapons in my community. And
they're used for the wrong reason.
And they're used for the wrong reason. So, you know, I have grandchildren, and like you said, you have children. How do you feel each day sending your children off to school, knowing that these things are so readily available to our youth, these semi-automatic weapons?
I do not agree with that. I was one time at a rally in Ferguson, mm-hmm. and a man was walking around, and he was an ally with an AR-15, and it made me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes me nervous, too, to walk into Walmart now on the Go-Mart. It makes me nervous even with somebody with, you know, a basic handgun, knowing that that person's not trained with that weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason, like I said, there's no reason for anybody, you know, if I've seen people that I know are saying that they take those, you know, those weapons to the gun range and it's a fun thing for them. But it's not so important for somebody to have a toy. Mm-hmm. A toy when we have a psychopath that can go and, you know, shoot somebody down in the streets and shoot up schools like they have. You know, if you go with a handgun, they have to reload it. It's not a powerful weapon like that. And I totally agree with you. I am totally for the AR-15 ban because, I mean, a toy to somebody is not worth somebody's life.
Yeah. At least take them back until we can take a better look at it. Okay,
exactly.
We're coming up on the last 15 minutes, and I want to give you an opportunity to kind of share your vision again with our listeners. As a mom, as a person running for Senate in West Virginia?
Well, like I said, I want to tackle the addiction epidemic. And how we do that is we put federal and state funding into long-term recovery systems. We have to make sure that our incumbents, we have to overturn Citizens United. And it's up to the public, too, to vote in people that are going to side with them. And by doing that, you have to vote for people that have sworn off corporate and corporate PAC dollars. And people are not taking money from big corporations in these industries. Secondly, we have to go after these pharmaceutical companies shipping these pills in their communities in mass amounts. Not only do we need tracking systems, but we have to go after them, and they have to be accountable on a federal and a state level and make sure that there's laws and they're held accountable.
Yeah.
And like I said, thirdly, we need long-term recovery systems. We need funding going into those systems, and we need to make sure that we're also given the long-term recovery systems the support that they deserve. They need social workers. They need mental health providers. They need facilities. We need one on every single corner, and we need to do everything we can to make sure that people have a path to recovery.
Yes, great.
When we talk about jobs and economic growth, I have a vision. I'd like to create an investment bank. I want to put federal dollars into states like ours. I want to create a diverse economy for West Virginia so we don't go down the same path. I said we could have renewables, we can manufacture those here, we could invest in hydropower, biofuel, agriculture, hemp. If we legalized hemp, put it on mountaintop removal sites. Those sites are not viable. It's been proven. You can't put a Walmart out in the middle of nowhere and people want to go to it. There was a prison built on one of these sites and it got filled with methane because they're not fit for a rattlesnake. They're a rocking, barren wasteland. The one thing that has been proven that can work on mountaintop removal sites is hemp. There's no topsoil there. It creates topsoil. It cleanses the soil. Like I said, I don't think initially we can do anything medicinal with hemp on mountaintop removal sites, but we can create plastics and we can, it's a benefit. It's something to do. It's an alternative. We can create growth out of the damage that's been done. If we legalized hemp, legalized cannabis, we could see economic growth within 6 to 8 months. That is West Virginia's path to diversity. Colorado's done it. They've benefited from it. We could look at the model of what Colorado's done, and we could get West Virginia back on our feet. The possibilities are endless, but we have to make sure that it happens, and we have to make sure that we vote for people that are visionaries for our children's future.
Vote, vote, vote. Like I agree. So how can, for our listeners, how can we donate to your campaign? Can you enlighten us on that?
Well, you can find me, please, on social media, PaulaJean2018. My website is PaulaJean2018.com. You can find there, or you can message someone, too. If you don't want to use ActBlue, my ActBlue account, too, it's PaulaJean2018 where you can donate. But if you don't want to use ActBlue, you can send a check in to my bookkeeper in Morgantown. If it's not on our website, then somebody can message me or one of my team and we can give you the address. But, you know, outside of donations, too, we've had boots on the ground in all 55 counties. We have less than 30 days now before the primary. please get out and vote in the primary, because this is your check. You know, the primary is one of the biggest and most important aspects of an election. Mm-hmm. That's part of democracy. That's when you can pick your Democrat. That's when you can pick your Republican. That's when you can pick, you know, because with the two-party system, people don't realize when you go to the ballot box in the primary, even if you're registered, you know, independent, you have to pick a Democratic or Republican ticket. But that's when you're, that's your choices. When it gets to the primary, you know, the Democrats already decided and the Republicans already decided. So you're only voting for the lesser of two evils like it has been in the past. So right now we have a primary and we have a lot of people running. So you have to get to the ballot box and make sure that you put your vote on your choice, on mm-hmm. your people serving candidate.
Yeah, people can
so
vote
we can get to the primary.
Mm-hmm. People can vote early as well, right?
Yes, yes. I think early voting is on April 25th.
Mm-hmm. So, Paula Jean, I know, and when I met you, I said, okay, she's a very small, stature-less woman. And we have Joe Manchin, who is a 6'3", looking three-ish, quarterback. And it sounds like David and Goliath. But everybody knows the story. David hit Goliath in the middle of his forehead with a rock. Are you intimidated by all of this, or are you standing firm as a coal miner's daughter?
Well, you know what? I think one thing that people don't realize, and about Appalachian women, we are strong. And when you mess Amen. With their young, there's hell to pay. We're going to go to war.
Yeah.
And I've been fighting these people for years. Joe Manchin has 4.6 million in his campaign account and less than 2% is individual donations. Mm-hmm. This campaign has got, you know, through individual donations, the average donation of $27, we have garnered $250,000. But we have had thousands of West Virginians sign up to volunteer for this campaign. People across this state have united for this campaign, just like the teachers and the educators. You don't underestimate West Virginians. We have been divided by propaganda. You know, you've seen people want mm-hmm. almost fist fight over politics, but then, mm-hmm. you know, it's the same people that if you're hungry, you know, you'll feed your neighbors, you'll take care of each other, you break down on the side of the road, somebody will help you. And that's the thing. People are awake to what's happened here. We're not, you know, we see what happened with the propaganda, and we're all ready to go to war. And you don't mess with the Appalachian woman and her young.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. That brings to mind, I was watching the channel with the bears, and that grizzly, that mama bear, you don't get within sniffing distance of her baby, and she's coming after you. And so I believe that. That we can begin to heal the forest. I heard you mention earlier about the toxic waste up in your area of West Virginia. And so if you have a sick and dying tree in this toxic soil and you take the tree out and you nurse it back to health and then you put it right back in that toxic soil, it's going to die again. And that seems to be the path of the elections. Since I've been in West Virginia and, you know, across the country. In the beginning, we get a whole lot of fluff. And at the end, we're put right back in that toxic soil. And so what is your vision about changing the culture in West Virginia in terms of the heroin epidemic, the economic inequality, the racism? And we have about 5 minutes. And so I'm going to turn you loose and let you weigh in on that one.
Well, you look at the history, and you even look about what happened with the Industrial Revolution, and this is what I think with the racism in the state. If you keep poor white people and black people divided, you keep them downtrodden.
Mm-hmm.
When I came down to the Eastern Panhandle, I have never been welcomed like I have been welcomed there. When I went to church, I haven't been to church in years, and I was raised Baptist. Went into
Destiny.
You know, a Baptist church there, and the people were black. I've never felt so much love in my life.
It was a fun time, yeah.
It was an amazing time.
And you also came to Worship Life.
you go into the hollers here in West Virginia, into these extractive communities, what you'll find is, like I said, some of the poorest people and the least educated mm-hmm. people, and that's where you'll find your racism. Mm-hmm. And what's happened with us through mm-hmm. the oppression of this state, they have kept us divided. You look at our ancestors, you look at, and I've said this over and over and over before, even our educators were at the Capitol fighting for our unions. Mm-hmm. Mother Jones, Joe Hill, the miners of Blair Mountain, Mate One, our ancestors fought mm-hmm. and died for this state because they united. Mm-hmm. They united. Back at, you know, when you fight for this country, it doesn't matter if you're black or white, you're brothers and sisters.
That's right. That's
and what
right.
you're seeing is a big movement happening in this state.
A paradigm shift.
When our
shift.
Educators and public employees and the CWA workers and the people in TechnoCap were standing out in the streets and standing up, we all stood together. When one of us bleed, we all bleed.
That's right.
And you're seeing change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a beautiful experience to me. It's something I have prayed for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
My ancestors, I thought, were turning over in their graves.
Yeah.
I am proud of my state right now. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's a start, and we're going to keep on moving forward. Mm-hmm. I have more hope now than I've had in 10 years.
Yeah. Recovery Radio is proud of you, Paula Jean, and we really thank you for coming on this morning. One of our greats, one of the Kennedy brothers said in a speech that he gave that when the freedom of one person is threatened, the freedom of every person is threatened. And I believe that is such a powerful statement. And I believe that you're a powerful woman. And I'm very optimistic about this campaign. So here on Recovery Radio. So we really appreciate you coming on this morning. You have any closing statements? We got about 2 minutes.
I want to thank you, James. I mean, it through my path throughout the years and everything that I've done, you meet people and you know their instant family, and some of even through our hardships, you build relationships that you'll never forget. And you and your wife, they're beautiful. I can't thank you enough for your hospitality, and I look forward to seeing you again. And I'm glad to have a friend for a lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. And so my wife was trying to call in this morning, I'm sure, because she said to me, she said, "You tell Paula Jean I said to call me." And she wouldn't tell me why. So you're going to have to call her and find out. And maybe okay, let me in on it, because she wouldn't tell me. She said, "That's between us girls." So I believe she's looking forward to, helping out in the campaign trail. So thank you, Paula Jean, for coming on this morning. Enlightened Radio and Recovery Radio has certainly been blessed by having you on as a guest this morning. Okay?
And, it's a blessing for me, too.
Yeah.
And everybody out there, have a great day and keep going and keep strong.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. We're going to close out with one of my favorites. I love this movie. Tommy Lee Jones.
Well, I was born a coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler. We were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing that Daddy made sure of. He shoveled coal to make a poor man.
In the summer.
the money somewhere.
Let the moon.